You're listening to Wake Up Tucson. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, 8:07 in the morning. You're on the Wake Up Tucson show. Welcome to an Italiano Friday. We're celebrating. We just had Locale Tucson on with Deb and Nick on in the last hour over on Broadway and Alvernon area in that beautiful building just north of the Mexican consulate there. That has great potential, and I'm so thrilled that they're going to do a coffee place that's going to start at 7:30 in the morning in a couple of weeks. That'll be very good. It's also the day I'm going to be teaching an Italian cooking class with Michelle over at Flying Aprons. Go to flyingapronstucson.com. You might be able to get in late, but you do have to buy some stuff and prep before. So I'm going to be doing fettuccine Alfredo and the shrimp scampi. So go to flyingapronstucson.com. Let's go right to the phones. I looked up how to say it in Italian. Timoteo Sandifer calling in from the Goldwater Institute. Timoteo.
Hey, I had no idea it was Italian Friday. My wife will love this. My wife is Italian.
Look at that. You mean from Italy or Italian-American?
Italian-American. Okay. And you'll enjoy this story, actually. So a couple years ago, we met Justice Antonin Scalia at an event, and I said to him, I said, Justice Scalia, you'll enjoy this. I said, my wife's family name is Pepperelli.
Oh.
And he turns and he says, Pepperelli? And she gave that up for Sandifer? She must really love you.
Absolutely. Imagine if you did the other way. Timoteo Pepperelli. Welcome aboard.
Thanks for having me back.
I got some news that's going to give you a little bit of a giggle, because I know you love Chuck Huckleberry almost as much as I do. So his emperorness in the midst, everyone else is taking paychecks out there, pay cuts. Even the U of A president is slumming at his $800,000 instead of $1 million a year right now, okay? And the Chuckster comes in with his four-year contract renewal for a brand new board of soups, wants his raise that bumps up every year, because it's, you know, he's somewhere between $300,000 and $400,000 a year. And the labor unions, which are usually the linchpin of the Democrat Party down here, they all came out against him yesterday and said,
remarkable.
Please do not have this man come back again.
That's remarkable. That is really something.
So hopefully there's a shot, a small shot, that we might be able to, you know, release our we have nothing to lose but our chains, as someone once said.
Well, unfortunately, there's still a lot of chains left to lose. There's the corporate welfare mentality that the Board of Supervisors has, that it's okay to take taxpayer money and give it to private businesses for their own private benefit because somehow that generally improves the economy, that the Board of Supervisors should be able to pick and choose which businesses win or lose in the economy, as opposed to fair competition deciding that case. And then this idea that the Board of Supervisors can shut down the entire county overnight with an illegal curfew that's expressly prohibited by state law. I mean, it's remarkable what goes on in that area.
I thought that Governor Ducey in his State of the State had his best explanation of why he's not going to do a lockdown again.
Right.
All right. It's the best thing he said in about 8 months in that part of the speech. But I was also kind of disappointed that he wasn't the first one to say you're overstepping your bounds.
Well, I think Governor Ducey tends to be really reluctant to interfere with local decision-making because he trusts our sort of decentralized system where the people who are closest to the problem get to address the problem. In this situation, that's really overstepped what the law allows, because state law expressly prohibits counties from disregarding the governor's own orders, and the governor's executive orders expressly prohibit this curfew, and the county has basically just said, we're going to do it anyway.
Well, again, but still, and I guess my thing is, if you remember late summer, when Howie Fisher was in Doug's face about letting Tucson and Pima County do their thing, he said, well, I'm the governor, and my mandate's for the entire state. So mm-hmm. I kind of feel like if it really was expressly against, wouldn't that be worth at least one letter to the county that says, hey, bro,
Yeah, well, and fortunately, there are businesses that have stood up against this and have filed this lawsuit, which there is going to be a hearing today over the legality of the Pima County curfew, which not only does it contradict the governor's own orders, but it contradicts state law, which expressly says that the county can impose an emergency curfew only when necessary to protect public safety. But public safety is not at risk here. There's no disorder. That's the other thing. The state law allows the county to impose an emergency curfew to preserve order. But there's no disorder going on. There's a disease going on, and that means that the curfew, which I guess is premised on the idea that the disease takes the night off or something, exceeds state law regardless of what the governor said. But in addition to that, the governor's executive order expressly prohibits the county from passing this curfew.
Aren't Chucky's lawyers going to come in and we're gonna have a debate on defining the word safety?
Oh, you know, it's even better than that. What the county's argument is, they say, no, this isn't an emergency order to begin with. This is just a general health regulation. And we're allowed to pass general health regulations. This is nothing different than when we come in and say a restaurant can't have, you know, cockroaches in the kitchen. Okay, well, the problem with that is that the ordinance itself expressly says it's limited in time, it's passed for an emergency purpose, and everybody knows that it was adopted because of this pandemic. So it has to comply with state laws about what counties can and cannot do in times of emergency, and with the governor's order about the emergency, and they can't try and, you know, evade that limit by saying, oh no, this is just a general health regulation, just like when we require people to have licenses and stuff. That's such a silly argument. I have a hard time believing that the court's going to take it seriously.
You know, I feel like every time as we start moving through and have more of these court cases, these bureaucrats who keep quoting the word science and data, which as we say here on Wake Up Tucson, once we say that, they're not really following science or data half the time. When they get to court and they have to prove their side, and we just had this case in New York where the restaurant owners got over on Cuomo, it feels like their science and data isn't really holding up.
Well, unfortunately, the government very often doesn't have to provide any science or data to support the decisions it makes. Unfortunately, under existing legal precedent, which is wrongly decided, but it is the precedent that's on the books, government has wide leeway to do basically whatever it thinks is a good idea, regardless of whether there's any scientific or intellectual backing for it at all. And that's kind of what the argument the county is going to present. They're going to say, well, we don't have to prove that this actually does do anything. We just have to prove that we thought that it would do something good. And most of the time, unfortunately, courts allow that.
The other thing, too, is when Werman was cross-examining Kara Crist in the bar case, and he asked her, what kind of proof did you guys have to shut down bars or gyms? And she literally admits, we really didn't have anything. That'd be like I wish I could get video of that and send it out to everyone in Arizona.
Oh, I've had similar situations in one of the cases I litigated years ago. It was about an occupational licensing law in California. I got the government's expert witness to testify on the stand that it was positively irrational. And it was quite amusing because as soon as he said that, the government's lawyer stood up and said, can we take a break? Step out into the hallway. He comes back in. He says, I'd like to clarify what I said about it. Nevertheless, we lost the case in that case because the government is given such incredibly wide leeway when it comes to economic freedom, what businesses do, private property rights. The government can basically do whatever it wants in those realms. When you talk about other kinds of rights that courts actually care about, freedom of speech and that sort of thing, then the government has a harder time. But when it comes to economic liberty, private property rights, the right to earn a living, courts have allowed government officials to do basically whatever they want. Now, if you look in the Constitution to find that distinction, to find anything in the Constitution that says the government can do whatever it wants in the economy, but it can't do whatever it wants when it comes to freedom of speech, there's nothing in the Constitution that says that. This is a completely invented doctrine that courts have come up with in about the 1930s and have just stuck with it ever since. And that's a shame, but that is the current law. Fortunately, that is not really the law that governs with regard to this curfew. the more important argument in the curfew case is that this violates state statutes. It just contradicts what the Arizona code provides. So fortunately, I don't think we face quite as uphill a battle in that situation.
Tim, can I hold you for another segment, please?
Yeah, sure.
Awesome. We're hanging out with Timoteo Sandifer here on Italian Friday at Wake Up Tucson. I want to talk a little bit more about this curfew case that they filed an amicus brief on behalf with our good friend Grant Kruger from the Union Public House, Maverick, Cobra Arcade, and Highwire. And if you have a question or comment for Tim, 790-2040. You're on Wake Up Tucson, 1030 The Voice. All right. I need an espresso and a cannoli right now, I think. We're hanging out with Tim Sandifer, Goldwater Institute. Tim, welcome back, sir.
Thank you for having me back.
Where do we get it to? Where does the Sandifers? Well, first of all, does your wife cook Italian food?
No, she doesn't, but we eat a great deal of it, so I think that makes up for that.
If I was coming up to Phoenix for a weekend trip, you know, maybe go hang out at the football stadium and get my vaccine or something, because Pima County, okay, let's do it. This will go back to Pima County. We're the second worst county in the state of getting people their vaccine. So another thing we suck at. So we have people going to be doing roadies up there to go to the football stadium. Maybe they want a little Italian food after their vaccination. Where would you send them?
There's two places. We were really pleased with Sicilian Butcher, which I think everybody has heard of. And then there's a place called Sam and Luca's. That's S-A-M and then Luca, L-U-C-A. Sam right. and Luca's. And that place is just fantastic. We had that for just around Christmas, and it was really, really good.
And where is Sam and Luca at?
I believe that's in Chandler.
Okay. Very cool. We'll check them out. I'm looking them up right now. Sam and Luca AZ. .com. So, all right. Good job, Sam. This is more important than any of this legal crap you've given us.
That is certain.
So you kids are jumping in on an amicus with Grant Kruger and these different folks.
That's right. We filed a brief in this case arguing that the Pima curfew violates the state law that gives the county its authority. Counties only have the power to do things that the state legislature lets them do. And although the county does have authority to impose curfews in certain circumstances, it can only do so in order to preserve peace and order. And there's no disturbance of the peace going on here. This is a health emergency. And so that law doesn't allow the county to adopt this curfew. And on top of that, the governor's order expressly prohibits any county from imposing any regulation that goes above and beyond what he himself put in the executive order number 36 back in the summer. And the county has ignored that. Also, the order expressly prohibits counties from imposing any rule that will restrict people to their homes. And a curfew, by definition, restricts people to their homes. So those are just three of the reasons why this curfew is illegal. And the county basically thumbs its nose at that and says, no, we can do basically what we want when it comes to health regulations. Well, this isn't a health regulation. For one thing, the curfew applies to everybody, not just to businesses, not just to restaurants, and it applies across the entire county. So this isn't a health regulation. This is an emergency order, and so it has to comply with state law.
We were talking about this with Grant earlier in the week. I love the idea that the county had untrained snitches from other parts of the government wandering around at 10 o'clock at night to see how many of the businesses were complying to a voluntary curfew. And they found that it was 85%, which was way higher than I ever thought it would be, Tim. But yeah, according to King Huckleberry, that 15%. Just too much
because not obeying. And see, here's the real problem with these curfews. I assume that people who think that things like curfews and things are a good idea, I think they really have their best of intentions. The problem is they don't see the downsides, which is anytime the government comes in with a mandate or a restriction like this, you're saying that you're willing to arrest people and throw them in jail for violating these rules, which means you're increasing the likelihood of confrontations, possibly violent confrontations with citizens, which could, you know, as we know from this past summer, can explode when tempers are high. Yep. And you're talking about putting people in jail where they're going to be necessarily in close contact with one another, which is counterproductive if you're talking about a communicable disease. So the idea that that people aren't doing what I think is a good idea, so I'm just going to force them to do it. That mentality is really counterproductive, not helpful in a crisis like this, and can really lead to dangerous situations.
Who's the judge in this case?
I don't remember the judge's name in this case. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Now, the next, did I hear right that Kima County wanted to block the Goldwater brief in this?
Yes. Well, and you know, I always kind of laugh at this. When you file one of these friend of the court briefs, you have to ask everybody if they're okay with it. And they can say no. But when they say no, then I have to go and file a motion and go through all the rigmarole of appearing in front of the judge and everything. And, you know, all I'm trying to do is file a 9-page document that the county is perfectly free to ignore. But no, they have to make a big deal about it. And, you know, it's so silly. But fortunately, the judge did allow the motion.
A listener just messaged me. They want to know, is it possible? Is this something that they would, you can watch this over the interweb?
No, I don't believe it's on video. It will be on the phone, but I don't know whether the public is allowed to participate in it or not.
I saw that 208, the judge killed the injunction to stop the collection of the extra 3.5%. In taxes. I know this is not your case, but I got you here. So
this is our case, Prop 208 case, but that's not quite what happened. What happened is that we asked for an injunction on four different reasons, and the judge was taking a little bit of time to issue a decision. And so we asked him if he could tell us anything, and he said, okay. He said, I'll tell you about one of those four things, and that is I'm gonna rule against you on one of those four arguments. But the three other arguments still remain in front of him, and we're just waiting for a decision on that.
Well, who's your compatriot that's doing that case?
We're working alongside Dominic Dre, who is the former Solicitor General of Arizona.
Okay.
And this case is you know, obviously very important to not only to our side, but also to the proponents of this initiative. And the judge's decision yesterday, I think, causes some real confusion over what this initiative really means. And I think it just makes it all the more important that the Arizona Supreme Court take it up as quickly as possible and decide this case and explain what the law does and doesn't require. Because Prop 208 is so badly written,
yeah,
so sloppy in some ways, that I don't think anybody can really make sense of what it actually does, other than impose crushing taxes in one of the worst economic downturns in American history. So other than that, what exactly it means is still kind of up in the air.
And well, we got about 40 seconds left. Anything on my beautiful crew at Worldview?
No, the balloon case, we're still waiting for a decision.
Okay. All right. Well, Tim, have a good 2021. I always appreciate the updates, and we'll make sure some people, when they go to Sam and Luca, they want the Sanderford discount when they get there.
Ciao, Bella. Did Tim, I get that right?
That's not bad. That's all good. It's all good. Tim, have an amazing weekend, man. Talk to you soon.
Yep.
All right, we'll come back. So we played Springsteen, and I was thinking, oh, why are we playing that on Italian Day? But his mom, of course, is Italian. Zerilli. So he's got a lot of Goomba on the mom side. So, all right, we got a half hour left to Wake Up Tucson until my weekend starts and I get ready prepping for the cooking class. Wake Up Tucson, 10:30 The Voice, West Montgomery, Big Italian. There we go. If you don't start swaying to Mambo Italiano, you either have a fused spine or problems or other problems. It's too good. It's too damn good. Welcome back to the Wake Up Tucson show. It's an Italiano kind of Friday. Going to be cooking up some Italian food at flyingapronstucson.com with a bunch of you later today. So I'm looking forward to that. Let's do this. Let's start off. Louis Gohmert. He's a congressman from the great state of Texas. He kicked up a notch in his remarks. Some liberal media members felt it was a call for more unrest. And some Democrats, this is from, who is this? This is Vespa over at townhall.com. Some Democrats thought he should have been promptly handcuffed before it was all over. So what happened was Gohmert said on the several members of the media went after Louis Gohmert, suggested he was calling for more uprisings following last week's Capitol Hill riot. So this is what he said. I just want to make sure we get this out, okay? Here's a quote. Quote, "I don't even know why there aren't any more. Why aren't there more? Why aren't there uprisings all over the country? And maybe there will be. Sadly, the domestic enemies of our voting system and honoring our Constitution are right at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue with their allies in Congress." Unquote. And then Gohmert goes on, "We were called enemies of the state." And so when he said this, people were getting all pissed off at him. Now, what's even better is, do you know who? Those are not his original words. So again, one more time, let me tell you, I don't even know why there aren't more. Why aren't there uprisings all over the country? And maybe there will be. "Sadly, the domestic enemies of our voting systems and are honoring our Constitution are right at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue with their allies in Congress," unquote. And who said that? Not Louis Gohmert originally. He was just repeating the words of, yes, Nancy Pelosi. So, again, the double standard here is pretty interesting. Let's get to Ronald Reagan. And this is from Scott Walker, former governor of the great state of Wisconsin. And he starts off with a refugees crammed on a leaky little boat who came across the USS Midway. They said, "Hello, American sailor. Hello, freedom man." They were hoping to get to America from Indochina. This is Ronald Reagan talking. "A small moment with a big meaning. The moment the sailor who wrote it in a letter couldn't get it out of his mind. And when I saw it, neither could I. Because that's what it was to be an American in the late 80s. We stood again for freedom. I know we always have, but in the past few years, the world again, in a way ourselves, rediscovered it." President Reagan shared this story in his farewell address delivered 32 years ago this week. And prior to 81, the U.S. was in a malaise. Iran held our hostages for 444 days. It was bad. And now at the end of the Reagan presidency, we were proud to be Americans again, and it was a great feeling. In his address from the Oval Office that evening, Reagan also gave us a warning. "It bears repeating as the words are more important today than they were at the end of the 80s. He said this. Here we go. "An informed patriotism is what we want. And are we doing a good enough job teaching our children what America is and what she represents in the long history of the world? Those of us who are over 35 or so years of age grew up in a different America. We were taught very directly what it means to be an American. And we were absorbed almost in the air, a love of country and appreciation of its institutions. If you didn't get these things from your family, you got them from your neighborhood. From the father down the street who fought in Korea, or the family who lost someone at Anzio. Or you can get a sense of patriotism from school. And if all else failed, you would get a sense of patriotism from popular culture. The movies celebrated democratic values and implicitly enforced the idea that America was special. TV was like that too through the mid-60s. But now we're about to enter the 90s and some things have changed. Younger parents aren't sure that an unambivalent appreciation of America is the right thing to teach modern children. And as for those who create the popular culture, well-grounded patriotism is no longer the style. Our spirit is back, but we haven't re-institutionalized it. We've got to do a better job of getting across that America is freedom. Freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom of enterprise, and freedom is special and rare. It's fragile. It needs protecting. Freedom is special and rare. It's why so many people come to these United States from all over the world. They yearn for freedom. So we've got to teach history based on not what's in fashion, but what's important. Why the pilgrims came here. Who was Jimmy Doolittle? And what those 30 seconds over Tokyo meant. You know, 4 years ago, on the 40th anniversary of D-Day, I read a letter from a young woman writing to her late father who fought on Omaha Beach. Her name was Lisa Zanata Hen, and she said, quote, "We will always remember, we will never forget what the boys of Normandy did." Well, let's help her keep her word. If we forget what we did, we don't know who we are. I'm warning of the eradication of the American memory that could result ultimately in erosion of the American spirit. Let's start with some basics. More attention to American history and a greater emphasis on civic ritual. So I'll put this up later. This is from the Washington Times saying, using Reagan's words to prepare the young to be defenders of liberty. It's really interesting about love for country is a political thing. This sounds really weird, but it's a meme, and it's a picture of Nancy Pelosi looking amazingly uncomfortable holding a little American flag, right? And the meme says it's like a vampire holding a cross. Okay, for some reason, patriotism and love of America on the Democrat side, I don't know why it's so hard for them. I'm telling you, when I walk in areas that I know are Democratic and more Democrat dominated, I'm just wearing my hat with the American flag, I feel like I'm making a couple of them uncomfortable. I mean, they think some of you are crazy because you walk around on a corner with your American flag, and that's just a bad place to be. This idea of America isn't something that's a workaround. This is not the Constitution. Isn't just some pesky thing that you work around. You know, it is something that, you know, again, we keep talking about. We just had this discussion about illegal immigration. All of these people that are clamoring to get into this country, they're dying literally to get into this country. And I feel like some of those people appreciate this thing that's America more than some of the people who live in this country, which is really sad. And part of it is public schools suck and colleges suck even worse. And in relation to the idea that it's corny to talk about your love of America, you know, and things that are, at TUSD, we want to replace United States history with Mexican American history. Can't we do both? Can't kids understand that there's something about America that lets everyone have their opinion? And things are just weird right now. And we knew this over the last 4 years. Donald Trump makes people crazy. His presidency has people doing and saying things and gone overboard that they've never done before. If the Dems thought that we were pissed off about Obama, they were 78 times more pissed off about Trump. And he has just, as Bill Beard has said many a times, quoting the Mel Brooks movie Spaceballs, that some of you have just gone plaid. You just went straight to plaid. Okay? And these American values really mean something to a lot of people all over the world. There are people living in dictatorships who are thrilled that there's this thing called America that exists out there. And it's their dream. They may never escape that dictatorship or whatever crap hole in the world they live in. But their dream for a lot of them is they wanted to be in a place that's like America. That you don't get busted by your government wherever they're at for complaining against government. right? The idea that you can remake yourself every day, that you can build the business out of nowhere if you work your rear end off and be your own boss. And those that stuff is important. And I know if I read this speech to the Pima Democrats luncheon, whenever the next time they meet in person, there would be people probably snickering in the crowd. Oh, that's corny. That's corny crap. You know something? That corny crap is really what makes us the basis of being, you know, an amazing constitutional republic that means freedom for billions of people across the planet. And again, when there's people out there who say, oh, America is this horrible, crappy place, there are a lot worse places in the world you can be that you couldn't even say that country is a crappy place without someone maybe getting in your face. So thank you, Ronald Reagan. I always like going back to some of his speeches and doing it up. Let's see what end of this. Let's see what Billy Beard. Dreams can sustain you even in the worst times. Amen, brother. Amen. Amen. All right, let's go to break. 8:48 in the morning. One more segment. Zach's coming up on Tipping Point. Wake up, Tucson. 10:30. The Voice. There we go. No. Andrea Bocelli doing the Ave Maria. That's a good way to end the Italian Friday. So, yeah, let's see. What do we got here? That would be 4, maybe like 8.5 hours away till we do our cooking class at 5:30, flyingapronstucson.com. And then again, as Tim Sandifer said later today, next couple hours is the lawsuit from the county against the county by the bars about curfews, and they are looking for an injunction to happen that the unless the county can prove it on their side, they might kill the curfew today, this morning in Pima County. So we shall see how all that plays out. Tuesday, we're off Monday for Martin Luther King's birthday, and then Tuesday we are back and we have Michael Beatrice, COVID lockdowns trial, lots of stuff to cover with Michael, and then 7 o'clock, a doubleheader, a Marana hour. We have Mayor Ed Honey, and then we have the police chief and acting town manager Terry Rosema are going to be here for a jam-packed Marana. Tuesday at 7 o'clock. So can't wait to catch up with those two gentlemen. I think that, like, again, locally, some of the biggest news that, you know, we covered today was that the two big labor unions that support Democrats in this town have come out, sent letters to all the Board of Supes that says they do not want Chuck Huckleberry back as the county administrator. So, again, District 1 at pima.gov, and send a nice email to Rex Scott, because he's going to be the swing on this. So you need to now Noah sent one to his. He has Matt Hines as his supervisor, and Noah got a response. Good afternoon, Noah. Thank you for writing Supervisor Hines and his staff. He's eager to ensure that... okay, blah, blah, blah. Okay. As he stated in his January 5th board meeting, Supervisor Hines will push for greater transparency and accountability in the terms of how the county administrator is evaluated. He believes that with an organization as complex and large as the county, with nearly 7,000 employees, it only makes sense to engage in a formal, comprehensive evaluation of executive leadership on an annual basis. Decisions about compensation should be based on outcomes of those evaluations. On behalf of Supervisor Hines and our team, thank you. That's from Shaq McCoy, who works for Matt Hines. So let's see, what was the date of this? This was Monday. So this is before this announcement came up from the unions. So again, Matt said it at that meeting. He said, "I'll extend him for 12 months, but we have to actually do a real comprehensive evaluation on him." And what happened was that if they got that done, if they said, okay, Chuck, we're going to give you 12 more months and then we're going to evaluate that, you know what he would do? He would quit. especially when he heard input from employees and the public. Because the last thing, and any sort of stakeholders, last thing Huckleberry wants is to be, quote, judged by his perceived inferiors. That's the last thing. That's the last thing. A guy like that and his ego, all of a sudden there's some public input where it's like, we can't stand him. He's a dictator. Oh, here's 5,000 comments about how much Huckleberry sucks. He doesn't want to go out like that. He would just say, you know, I'm going to quit and I'm going to slum on my $281,000 of retirement money every year until I die. I also like the line that says they want him basically his... The one line I thought that was very interesting from the Valerie Cavazos piece on this... was they want his contact with, like, involvement with Pima County reduced, like, immediately and or quickly, which I thought was a great line. I'm like, wow, they really can't stand him. They really can't stand. Oh, they want to limit his Huckleberry's involvement in Pima County. I wonder if that means please do not hire him as a consultant when he comes back or something like that. So, again, District 1 at Pima County, pima.gov. You know, a book that came into my head and it's been hitting a lot, and I guess the Antifa guys attacked a bookstore or something in Seattle because they were going to have a book that's about a guy talking about Antifa in not the best light. And it really got me thinking about Fahrenheit 451. I sent you the clip today. Maybe we're going to play it. We don't have time right now. So, it's just we'll play it next week. It's the passage where Beatty, who is Montag's, remember this is the book by Ray Bradbury where firemen burn books.
One of my favorites.
Yep.
I love Ray Bradbury, but this is one of my favorites.
And I was watching an interview with him last night, like on the origins of the book and things like that. And he calls up the local fire, like some fire station, because he wanted to find out what temperature book paper burns. And the guy's like, hold on, Mr. Bradbury. And then he came back and he goes, oh, that's 451 degrees Fahrenheit. And he said, 451 Fahrenheit, right? And he's like, that sounds good. 451 Fahrenheit. So Fahrenheit 451. So I was looking to see where it's streaming, the movie, the French one. Now, I have not seen the one on HBO with I've got the guy who's in the first the Black Panther movie. But I'll have to watch it. It's probably on HBO Max, but the original François Truffaut. Actually, the whole movie is on YouTube for nothing right now. So that's your MLK weekend movie homework is go on YouTube and watch Fahrenheit 451 by François Truffaut. Zachary's coming up with Tipping Point. We have Hugh Hewitt, Billy Buckmaster, Dave Ramsey, Get Weird, and then Lee Habib with that great Our American Stories. Everyone, have an amazing day. If you miss anything, kvy.com. Tom, have an amazing weekend.
Thank you, Chris. Same to you.
I'll see you the rest of you tonight for Italian cooking at 5:30.